The national debate on immigration is focusing increasingly on whether newcomers are assimilating into American culture. The U.S. is in the midst of its largest immigrant influx in a century. Many advocates say the newcomers need more help integrating, and the Department of Homeland Security says it's taking up that effort. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
On Washington's National Mall, where tour buses idle in front of history and art museums, it isn't hard to find people willing to express their view on immigrants today. Susan is typical in saying they live apart and they don't learn English.
It does not seem like they're assimilating quickly enough, and I think that there's a lot of American culture that is lost if we get splintered into all these different groups.
Tamar Jacoby, an analyst with the Manhattan Institute, says, in fact, people have always felt like this, all the way back to Benjamin Franklin's time.
Benjamin Franklin literally talked about the complexions of the Germans, you know, as if the English complexion was a certain kind of pink and the German complexion was a different kind of pink that wasn't going to fit in.
In 1751, Franklin worried whether Germans in Pennsylvania would become so numerous as to Germanize us instead of our Anglifying them. That fear sounds silly today, and yet Jacoby says the scale of the current Hispanic influx does pose real issues. America's foreign-born population increasingly speaks one language, Spanish, and with modern air travel and cheap phone rates, many Latinos maintain closer ties to their home countries than past groups did. In a new book of essays she's edited called Reinventing the Melting Pot, Jacoby sees a possible tipping point.
What could happen is a situation like the Turks in Germany, where you have what is some kind of a more or less permanent underclass, where people feel alienated from society, and they don't seize the opportunities that are open to them, and we think of them as the brown others.
Delmi Flores knows the isolation of a newcomer. As she offers tea and Girl Scout cookies in her Alexandria, Virginia home, this petite woman recounts her harrowing journey fleeing civil war in El Salvador in 1984, how she held her 11-month-old son high over neck-deep water crossing the Rio Grande into Texas. Joining her husband in Virginia, Flores found few Spanish speakers. Hearing her first 4th of July fireworks threw her into depression.
Back in El Salvador, we have fireworks for Christmas and for New Year's Eve. And it's kind of like my memories, you know, get back when I hear the fireworks on 4th of July, and I was crying. I don't even know about 4th of July.
With her husband working long hours, Flores was forced to venture out on her own and eventually learned English. But today, she sees a very different world for her young cousin. He came to the U.S. 5 years ago and immediately found work painting with his uncle, plus a ready-made social life in a now booming Hispanic community.
He don't need the language. He really don't need the language. But it come to the point that, you know, the company was, it doesn't have too much to do, and he has to look for another job. And every time he went to the interview, every time he needs something, you know, he was, how do you say this? And I said, remember, I told you, you need to go to school when you came here.
Refugees settled in the U.S. do get English language help, plus financial aid and a network of social services to introduce them to American life and culture. But regular immigrants are thrown into the marketplace to sink or swim, often holding down multiple jobs. Now, the government wants to offer more. Alfonso Aguilar heads the Office of Citizenship, set up last year in the Department of Homeland Security.
We want to make sure that nobody feels marginalized, that nobody feels left out. It's in the best interest of the country to make sure that everybody feels empowered and integrated into the civic culture.
In addition to offering practical advice, like how to get a driver's license, Aguilar seeks to promote loyalty and civic action. He's overhauling the citizenship test, focusing less on facts and figures, more on American ideals and values. And he has bigger ideas, like linking up immigrants with host families. Don Kerwin of the Catholic Legal Immigration Network says the effort is laudable, but extremely limited.
The reality is that it's a $4 million office with about $1 million for programs. But the need is a lot greater than that.
A century ago, when Italians, Poles, and Jews were immigrating in large numbers, there was a vast and vibrant Americanization movement. Everyone from state governments to local schools to neighborhood YMCAs took part, promoting love and loyalty for America. The movement fizzled after World War I, when new laws dramatically curtailed immigration. Today, analyst Tamar Jacoby envisions another grassroots campaign and says business should also get involved. She suggests companies could teach English to immigrant employees on lunch breaks. But with a more diverse population today, Jacoby says any movement must be more nuanced.
Since the 1950s and maybe even the 1920s, assimilation has had a bad name. People think it means turning everyone into some kind of leave-it-to-beaver, white-bread, non-ethnic, lowest common denominator American.
Jacoby says there's been a backlash against such thinking. It's multiculturalism, and she worries it has served to divide, not unite. Jacoby believes some middle ground is needed, a vision that embraces both belonging to America and ethnic heritage.
Is it Delmi?
In Virginia, Delmi Flores recently passed her citizenship test. A congratulation card from colleagues sits on a side table. She and her husband also have just bought a home. By all accounts, Flores is a model of successful assimilation. Yet she admits to mixed emotions. And when asked why she chose to become a U.S. citizen, her answer is at first confusing. It's so she can return to El Salvador. Flores cannot imagine growing old in the U.S., as she sees some neighbors doing.
And they live very lonely life. And back in El Salvador, age is respectful. You know, your neighbor is your family. Even though the Victor and Raphael, they always say, oh, mommy, I can't imagine put you somewhere, you know. We're always going to be there and this and that. But it's not true. They need to live their life. And I understand that.
And so, with her U.S. passport, Flores says she'll be able to easily come back from El Salvador to visit her two sons here. Like decades of second-generation immigrants before them, they cannot imagine leaving America, the only home they know. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News.